I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. We're rolling through our 15-week series of candidate forums with people from Western Wisconsin hoping to win state legislative office. This week, we're featuring the candidates running for the 28th State Assembly District. The 28th District includes much of Burnett County, most of Polk County, and a small part of St. Croix County. The man holding the seat, Republican Eric Severson, has decided not to run for re-election, leaving it wide open for two newcomers to state politics. I'm Rich Kramer, and joining me this hour are those two men. First, joining us in studio, I'd like to welcome Travis Schachner. Travis is a retired U.S. Navy submariner with a master's degree in leadership from Bellevue University. He also is the St. Croix County Board Supervisor elected in 2012. Travis Schachner, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And next, joining us by phone from his office, we've got Adam Jarkow. Adam is an attorney with Bach Norman. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, a law firm in Western Wisconsin. He also sits on the board of directors of the Polk County Economic Development Corporation and is a member of the Apple River Fire Department. Adam Jarkow, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. I love a good forum. What can I say? So basically, first off, I'll start with you, Adam. The basic, you know, why and what for. Without an incumbent in this race, both of you, relative newcomers, have a real shot at state legislative office, something that some people kind of do the leapfrog up to. What makes you think that you're up for the job, Adam?
Well, thanks for the question. Yeah, I've spent my decade-long career working with small business owners, community banks, local communities, and farmers. And the biggest issue that I see that we need to continue to address to keep Wisconsin moving forward is growing jobs and the economy. And so I think that my experience over the last decade working with these folks has given me a unique perspective into the issues and problems faced by our small businesses in Western Wisconsin, by farmers, by local banks, and how all of that works together, and how too often we have high taxes and regulations that cause significant issues for these folks when they're trying to grow or expand. So I look forward to the opportunity to work in the legislature to make sure everybody in Western Wisconsin can find a good-paying job.
All right. Now, Travis Schachner, what about you? What makes you think you're up for the job?
I think that the distinction of wanting to represent rural Wisconsin is vital. And unfortunately, our prior representation did not represent rural values and rural needs as much as he should have. And part of that conversation when is highlighted when there is a focus on jobs. Rural Wisconsin needs more than just jobs. We need careers, long-term employment that can support a family and lead to retirement. And when we just talk about just jobs, any part-time position will do to meet that low bar of expectation. And we need someone in the legislature who's going to demand more for the people of rural Wisconsin.
Now, one thing I just thought of this last night. Legislators, you know, they often bring specialties to the table when they propose legislation. Eric Severson was an ER doc, introduced some bills related to that. So would you have any specialty as far as bills are concerned? And I'm just kind of randomly going back and forth. Travis Schachner, first you, and then I'll go to Adam.
Well, I bring a couple specialties. First off is my experience in local government. I'm currently serving on the County Board of Supervisors for St. Croix County, and I'm in my second term. And I see a lot of firsthand experience with what happens with our state legislators are really going after the local control that is vital for self-determination when it comes to how our towns and counties are going to develop. On top of that, my experience as a veteran brings forward a unique perspective when it comes to meeting specific needs. And a family history of serving the community. My family has, we've I've got one of my sisters as a cop, one of my sisters as a teacher. My family is very community active.
Very good. Now, Adam Jarko, what kind of specialties would you bring to the table as a representative for the 28th?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, the specialty obviously is something that I mentioned earlier,
yep.
which has been working with small business owners and small businesses who deal with our tax and regulatory policies. I have firsthand experience seeing how good tax policies help to create jobs, poor tax policies help to kill jobs. Same thing on the regulatory front. The other experience that I have is not only working closely with local governments as their village or town or city attorney, but being a member of a volunteer fire department. I was out on a medical call just last night, and you know, last week we helped put together the budget for the next year for the fire department that I'm on. And so I see firsthand every day the importance of making sure that we're supporting our local governments and that our emergency services are supported and that our critical care services are supported. And I think those experiences combined with the experiences of working with the folks around here who create jobs gives me a little bit of a unique insight into what we need to do in Western Wisconsin to really have strong middle-class families and vibrant rural communities.
All right, with that, we've got a whole bunch of callers ready to get on the air here. And again, the 28th district includes most or a good chunk of Burnett County, actually probably most of Burnett County, nearly all of Polk, and a small part of St. Croix County. So that's the district. But you can give us a call whether you're in or out of the district, 800-228-5615. Sharon's been waiting to get on the air for a while here. So Sharon in St. Croix Falls, you're on the air. Thanks so much.
Hi, thank you. I'm wondering what are the candidates' views? Do you support the voter ID law? And if you don't support it, why don't you support it? And if you do support it, why do you support it?
Great question. Great question. Let's go with Travis Schachner first.
I actually do not support the voter ID law. We're setting up legislation that makes it more difficult for people to vote, to attack an issue that historically has less than 0.01% impact on the actual historical vote. I've been getting calls primarily as a county supervisor. I've been getting a lot of calls from people that are saying, I have been doing my civic duty regularly for the last 40, 50, 60 years. And now I have no idea how I'm going to vote. Just trying to keep up on what's going on with this issue has been a huge impact. And many of the voters, especially as you head further north, do not have up-to-date IDs that would qualify for this issue.
Adam Jarko, your thoughts on voter ID. Again, a law that was passed back in 2011, I believe, and has been in court ever since, the federal U.S. Circuit of Appeals Court, the Seventh Circuit, that is, basically reinstated the law. So your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. It's a common-sense reform that's supported broadly across the state. Every poll that I've ever seen shows incredible support for this, and there's a reason for that, and that is because people are tremendously protective of their right to vote and feel disappointed that they may have some questions about the integrity of the vote. And no matter whether there's one voter fraud case or thousands of voter fraud cases, I think the thing that we want to make sure that people feel comfortable that their vote is counting and is not diluted by a fraudulent vote. So showing an ID, particularly under the rules that have been set forth, which require that the ID be issued for free, and if you don't have the backup documentation to get an ID, that you can get that documentation for free, I think that makes common sense, and that's the kind of common sense legislation that folks broadly support, and so do I.
Let me follow up with that, and for both of you. You know, the Seventh Circuit Court just struck this down. We've got less than 50 days until the election. Some absentee ballots have already been sent out. Those have to be changed. Is now the time to put this law back into the effect? A lot of the critics of the law itself say, hey, we got to wait. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I heard Kevin Kennedy, the head of the GAB, talk about that, and his take on it was, while we've been preparing for this since 2011, people may not remember this, but the law was actually in effect
for spring.
I can't remember if it was a primary or a spring election.
Spring election.
Before it was enjoined by Judge Adelman. And so I think the GAB has made that call that they're ready to go with it. I think they've been working closely with the clerks to make sure that if those absentee ballots did go out, that they communicate with the folks who got them that they need to send in a copy of their voter ID. So I'm confident that ultimately those issues will be ironed out and the GAB will have that handled.
Travis Schachner, do you think it's too soon? Do you think this election is too soon for the law that was just overturned in the last week or so, or the law that was reinstated, I should say, to go into effect before a major election?
Yes. The issue with it is, especially in our district, we get most of our news from the Twin Cities. So this has not been on news that we receive outside as far as what's going on in Wisconsin. On top of that, the requirement for, or the time that we're given for the people who do not have like a birth certificate or something like that, they've already stated that could take over 5 days, 5 to 10 days. So if people who wish to vote do not get their paperwork in, like in a week or two, they will not be able to vote. It's just a straight up, they will not be able to vote because of just based on time. So I think this close to an election, it was a poor decision by the court because now we have given people a need to rush to get their IDs. And now we're just going to swamp the system. And that's if they know and if they're very active in Wisconsin politics.
This is the Westside 28th State Assembly Candidate Forum. I'm Rich Kramer, your host on Wisconsin Public Radio. We have the candidates that are running for this seat that is without an incumbent. Eric Severson held the seat, but he's chosen not to run for re-election. We've got two candidates, a Republican, Adam Jarko. He's the Republican from Balsam Lake. And Travis Schachner is the Democrat from Somerset. We've got callers on the line. Hang tight. We're going to take a very brief break. We'll be right back, and we'll go to Steve in Polk County if he's still on the line. So this is the Westside 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum. The number to call in with your questions or comments, 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the Westside 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum right here on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. We've got two candidates on the program hoping to win the 28th State Assembly seat. They are Travis Schachner, he's the Democrat from Somerset, and Adam Jarko is the Republican from Balsam Lake. 800-228-5615 to get your question and or your comment on the air. Right now we're going to Steve in Polk County. Steve, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on this very important forum. My question is that I would ask both candidates to speak to whether or not they would vote to repeal Act 10 or if they would support Act 10 that Governor Walker's administration put into place.
All right. Adam Jarko.
Yeah, I support Act 10, and I would not vote to repeal it. This is a law that has given school districts and local governments a tremendous amount of flexibility. It saved something like $3 billion, and it allows schools to have some flexibility and the opportunity to create some pay-for-performance mechanisms that can reward our really good teachers, and it allows them to, these school districts who find a teacher that's not performing, to either, give them some counseling to get them up to par, or if they just won't perform or can't perform, to be able to dismiss that teacher. And it's not just in schools, of course, but it's in all levels of local government. And it's been a good tool that has allowed the flexibility and the budget savings necessary. I mean, just the school districts that were able to bid out their health insurance in our district and have saved millions and millions of dollars by getting out of the monopoly of the union-run health insurance has been incredibly helpful for these schools. And so, yeah, I support that law and would not, of course, vote to repeal it.
All right, thanks for that. And so, Travis Schachner, Steve wants to know: do you support Act 10? And if not, would you work to dismantle it?
I do not support Act 10, and I think that the way it actually was put into place was a joke. It really was underhanded the way that it actually got in place. However, it is the law right now. I think when anybody asks about straight up repealing a law, I get very hesitant. Primarily because Act 10 really stressed even the best relationships between employee and employer, with the public employees and the public employers. What we really need to focus on is trying to find areas that we can improve that relationship. And if we were to straight up repeal it, I fear that many of those relationships that survived would be destroyed. So we need to not have sweeping legislation that just goes after everything and puts everything to a huge challenge like that. Taking more deliberate steps, what works, it was bad legislation, but what has worked out of that legislation and what can we address to make it better, okay. I think would be a smarter move than just straight up repealing it.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for the call and the question. Let's go to, sounds like it's going to be a similar topic, but let's go to Richard in Dressert. Richard, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thank you. It is a similar question, but I have an alternate that I'd like to ask both candidates, and what is their position on pro-life?
Pro-life. All right. Thanks so much. That's Richard in Dresser. I'll start with you, Travis, and we'll go to Adam.
I am pro-choice. When you talk about pro-life, a lot of the discussion ends there. When we had very active participation in schools that taught responsible education towards sexual activity and stuff like that, it actually decreased many of the abortion rates in the nation. When we turn away from that, it starts pushing it into the shadows, and it becomes a more divisive issue. I think we need to allow people to make the decisions for their lives and for the future. So,
if I could follow up, what do you think about the? There's been some legislation passed in Wisconsin that aims to make it maybe a little tougher for people. The admitting privileges is one thing. The doctors that perform an abortion have to have admitting privileges at a hospital within so many miles.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
That's just more legislation to force a pro-life agenda. If you take that and then you combine it with the necessity for transvaginal ultrasounds, now we're forcing more and more, we're forcing people to do more and more things and be involved with stuff that isn't a requirement for that. Especially with the transvaginal ultrasounds, there is no need for that for part of the decision-making process. It's just an added step to make it more difficult.
Adam Jarko, your take on the whole abortion issue, and also, is it black and white, pro-life or pro-choice?
Well, thanks for the question. Yeah, I am proudly pro-life. I've been endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life, and I believe that each and every life is precious. We should be protecting those who are most vulnerable, and I can't think of any person that's less vulnerable than a baby in the womb. So I am absolutely proud to be pro-life.
All right. Since we're on the issue of divisive, or on the topic of divisive things, gay marriage ban. Adam Jarko, this one I'll start with you. State attorneys are going to likely, this case that has been tied up in first Wisconsin courts, then appeals court, likely to make it all the way to this U.S. Supreme Court. related to Wisconsin's ban on gay marriages that was passed, added to the Constitution back in 2006. So back when they passed it, around 60% of voters supported the ban. Now polls show that a majority of residents don't support it. First of all, your thoughts on gay marriage itself and whether or not laws relating to things like that as serious as who can marry and who cannot being decided by public opinion.
Right. I appreciate that question. So I think it's important to keep in mind that, this issue will be decided by the courts. It's gone through the Seventh Circuit, and there's been various decisions from around the country, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court will have the final say on this. So I think what we need to do in this state where we have where we did pass that ban is wait to see what the decision is from the U.S. Supreme Court, and then we'll be able to come up with a response to that.
And I'm curious, since you're an attorney and you know the law better than I do, I'm by far. What are your thoughts? And this is just popping in my head about the what are your thoughts on some of the clerks in more than half of the counties passing or marrying people or issuing certificates at least after Judge Crabb's initial decision? Were they violating the law?
Well, I don't know if they were violating the law, but what I do know is I was disappointed in the decision. The first thing I thought in the decision that it didn't make it clear whether the law was still in effect or whether she enjoined the law.
Right.
That didn't come till later, and so it unfortunately made a lot of confusion out of something that didn't necessarily need to be so confusing. And so I think to some extent everybody, including judges, have to have some humility when it comes to these kinds of divisive, difficult issues that we're grappling with. And it would have been, in my view, nice if the judge would have made it clear. So you didn't put clerks in that difficult position, and you put not only clerks, but real people who, whatever you think about gay marriage, nobody questions whether these folks love each other and want to have a life together. Mm-hmm. And so you put real people in the middle of that difficulty, and now they're in limbo. And so I wish there would have been a little more clarity from Judge Crabb in her decision.
All right, Travis Schachner, first off, yes or no on gay marriage, and then also should these kind of laws be decided by public opinion or the majority rule?
If it's a loving couple, I am for them getting married. I think this is an issue that often that part, if it's two grown adults that love each other, that should be an option for them, especially in our nation where there are many benefits granted from just legal benefits granted that once that is applied, we should be willing to extend those benefits to anyone who's in a loving relationship. As far as public opinion goes, I think very often we assume that public opinion doesn't change. So something like this will pass through public opinion and then it gets left by the wayside. I'm pretty sure if we were to do the exact same thing today, we'd have a totally different result. And we need to be willing to understand that and allow for that change in public opinion.
The number to call in is 800-228-5615. This is the West Side 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum. We've got both candidates on the program. Adam Jarko is a Republican from Balsam Lake, and Travis Schachner is a Democrat from Somerset. If you missed part of the program and would like to listen again, you can check out our archives. Go to wpr.org. Click on the shows link, and then you'll see the West Side there. We've got years worth of programming archived online. We've also got all the forums that we've been doing since late August on there. So if you happen to be in a different part of the listening area and the 28th are not your candidates, check it out. You'll probably be able to find the debate or forum from your area on there. Also, next, or this Thursday, it's normally Spectrum West with Al Ross, but he is on vacation. We have a special edition of the Westside 87th Assembly District Candidate Forum. That's Thursday at 10 o'clock. The Republican in that race is James Jimmy Boy Edming. The Democrat is Richard Pulcher. They'll both be in studio, so stay tuned for that. 800-228-5615. We've got a caller on the air right now, and Suzanne in St. Croix County, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. Adam Jarko has said Wisconsin should have its own standard for voucher in public schools instead of Common Core. I would like to know how Travis Schochner feels about this and a little discussion as to why Adam Jarko feels that we should have our own standard instead of Common Core.
All right. Thanks so much, Suzanne. I think it was Suzanne. Travis Schochner, go ahead.
If you look at our nation as a whole, we rank, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, 20th in math in comparison to the world and 24th in reading. It was either 24th or 27th. But the catch there is that Wisconsin prior state standards were ranked 38th. We were actually, because we didn't set high enough standards, we were actually dragging down how we stand in the world. We need to participate very actively in our education system if we want to raise our nation standard in the world when it comes to education. If we want to be a part of that conversation, we should be a part of Common Core. When we develop our own standards, we have shown to have a history of setting a low bar, and we should set a high bar for our, not just for the students, but it's also a high bar for our school districts. It's a high bar for our teachers, and then it sets a high bar for our nation in achievement, which will help us in the long term economically, and it'll help us in the long term fiscally, because we are able to show the world that we are returning back to where we were as far as education is concerned.
Adam Jarko, your thoughts on Common Core? I've got a follow-up for both of you after this, though.
Yeah, well, let me just say something about Mr. Schochner's answer. I think it's ridiculous to say that Wisconsin doesn't lead the way. We, once again, scored second in the country in the ACT, and Wisconsin schools, for the most part, are very good schools. Particularly our schools in western Wisconsin are very good schools. Both Mr. Schochner and I graduated from schools in this area and are products of the public schools, and I'm very proud of that, and I'm very proud of our public schools. Just last week, or maybe the week before last, the school grades came out again from DPI, and every single school in the 28th Assembly District was either at or above where they were supposed to be. It is true that statewide, particularly in the Milwaukee School District, we have some schools that are underperforming. And so giving those parents of those kids choice in getting them out of failing schools is incredibly important. And then when we talk about state standards, the reason that I am passionate about making sure that we have high standards and accountability for every single school, whether it's a public school, a charter school, a voucher school, it doesn't matter, is because that is our future. Our children are our future. And if we don't make sure that they're learning now, it will set them back for their entire life and the life of their kids and the life of their kids. And so it is incredibly important that we, to some extent, depoliticize this discussion about schools, recognize what we're doing well, which is a lot of things, particularly in western Wisconsin, and recognize what we're not doing quite as well, and begin the process of building on those things that we do well. So I do support high state standards. I do support them as Wisconsin standards, and the reason is our economy in Wisconsin is not the exact same economy as you have all around the country, and so we ought to be training kids here, many, many of whom will not end up going to college, to either get into technical school where there's some fantastic opportunities or to be able to get a good job in our workforce right out of high school. So I support high state standards and accountability, whether you're a public charter or private school. If any school that's receiving government funding needs to live under the same standards.
Travis Shockner, you'd like to respond?
Yes. I understand that the economy in Wisconsin is not the same in comedy as it is in other parts of the nation. However, I do know that 1 + 1 = 2 no matter where you are, and that Common Core is focused on math. I know that a verb is an action word, and that is part of Common Core, is a focus on reading. And it's the same everywhere in the state, and that is what Common Core is measuring. So making sure that people who move from other parts of this nation into our state, that they can be rest assured that our standards are the same, is what is vital.
Let me follow you up on that. Common Core, there's a lot of people, you know, they like the idea of a set of standards that'll improve the nation's standing as far as education in the world, but there have been a lot of criticisms about how some of the questions are, you know, written. Mm-hmm. That you know, it might be, it's written by people in Washington and mm-hmm. New York, etc. What about that? I mean, Common Core, do we just accept it whole hog?
You going to me first?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, Travis Shockner. No,
well, considering that even with the standards that are used for SATs and ACTs, there are many questions that are thrown out every year due to the fact that they're bad questions. And oftentimes you'll see an entire test and it'll be quick to point out one or two bad questions in that entire test. And that's where the problem lies, is that we need to accept the fact that these are working standards, and every time the testing comes out, there is going to be some error in the test. If we're going to use the SATs and ACTs as an achievement standard, that it comes with the understanding that even in those standards that have been used for a very long time, there have been mistakes, and it's annually, and that's what needs to be addressed. Is the testing has mistakes in it annually, and they need to be addressed. So,
all right, and Adam Jarko, I guess kind of the inverted version of that question. Do you see any of the parts of Common Core that you actually like that you might want to, you know, even if you want the state to come up with its own standards, that you might borrow from Common Core?
You know, it's funny. You do not see very often teachers' unions and conservatives having the same point of view. And you've seen a number of teachers' unions across the country come out with concerns about Common Core. And, of course, you've seen a number of conservatives come out with some of the same concerns. You've even seen one of the more liberal comedians come out with concerns about Common Core.
Louis C.K.
You know, I was, and I was sitting recently with a business owner who happens to be an engineer, and they're doing some very high-tech work, and he was explaining to me some of the issues that he has with his daughter's math as an engineer, and how it didn't quite make sense how that was being taught. So do I think there aren't things that you can build on? Of course there's things you can build on. I mean, these were standards that Bill Gates had a hand in developing, and there certainly is very few people who understand our economy as well as Bill Gates. So do I think that you can't build on some of the things that are in there? Of course you can.
Okay. Now you mentioned school choice a little bit before, and I'll stay with you, Adam Jarko, and then we'll go to Travis Shockner right after that. But school choice, Governor Walker has signaled some interest in expanding the publicly funded voucher school program statewide. Do parents need school choice in the 28th Assembly District?
Well, the fact of the matter is they already have it. We've had open enrollment in the 28th Assembly District for a long time, and it works reasonably well. There are obviously issues that come up with anything, and that is not excluded for that. So we have school choice here. I think what you're talking about is the voucher program now limited and has a cap of right around 1,000 and is primarily in cities in southeast Wisconsin, and whether that could be expanded. And you know, a 1,000 cap in the pool of kids, particularly in that part of the state who need help now, is probably too low. These kids cannot wait for politicians and policymakers to come up with a solution. By the time that happens, they'll have moved from third grade to eighth grade and from eighth grade through, and will have been shuffled through the system, and we will have a difficult situation on our hands if we do not get these kids the education they need right now. And so if giving them and their parents a choice to get them into a private school is what it takes, then that's what it takes.
And now at Travis Shockner, Do you think the idea of expanding a voucher program statewide so that a parent, if they have a failing school in the 28th district, they could go to maybe a charter school if there is an option. Do you think that's worth expanding it statewide?
No. The as far as District 28 goes, there isn't much as far as options when it comes to the voucher program. But outside of that, the schools that are accepting through the voucher program are not performing on par with the public schools. And there is a simple solution to this problem: properly fund our public schools. When we're undercutting the funding to our public schools and then turning around and handing out taxpayer dollars to unaccountable private school and then saying, well, they're doing better, but they can't document that they're doing better, that there is an issue. If we were to actually fund our public schools, that would be a very easy and simple solution to a major problem. But since we insist on funneling the money to unaccountable standards, we get what we're paying for.
Since we're on the subject of schools and public funding, how do you feel? And I'll go to Adam Jarko first. How do you feel the state's incredibly complicated school funding formula, how does that bode for school districts in the 28th district?
I'll answer that, but let me first address just briefly the school funding issue.
Sure.
Just today, the Eau Claire Leader had an editorial that set out the numbers, the real numbers about school funding. And Wisconsin is still well above average in its per pupil school funding. And so you hear this rallying cry on the left all the time, oh, you know, evil Governor Walker and the evil Republicans have cut school funding. The fact of the matter is that school funding went up again last year under the governor and the Republican legislature. It's still, on a per pupil basis, well above the national average. Our staff compensation is 12th in the country at $76,000 of salary and benefits. We have a higher median salary than most in the country, and our fringe benefits are higher. So the idea that we are chronically underfunding schools is a false political attack. And as I say, I think we need to step back and try to take some of the politics out of education. And now I forgot what your question was.
I think I might have done the same. So how do rural school districts in the 28th?
Oh, funding. Yeah,
yeah. How do they
the
handle?
The formula needs work. So there are school districts in the 28th Assembly District that received the vast majority of their funding from the state, and then there are school districts right down the road that receive very little of their funding from the state, and it all turns on equalized value.
Right.
And I think that outcome isn't always fair, and it's an incredibly complicated formula, and I'm not going to pretend like I know the ins and outs. I think people who have been in the legislature for a long time and have worked on that issue don't know all of the ins and outs of that formula, but I think it needs, when you have the outcomes like that that are so disparate with schools in such close proximity, it certainly tells me that it needs some work.
Okay. I mean, one idea that's been floated is getting away from the equalized, the value of the property within the district being the determining factor, and instead of just going to a straight, you know, per pupil kind of a funding. But
There was a...
Sorry. Go ahead, Travis.
During the last legislative session, there was a proposal brought forward called Fair Funding for Our Future. And it was brought forward to address this, to update the equation and stuff like that. It is something that should have been implemented then, because the equation is... it's 30 years in need of update, and it's something, especially nowadays, that we really need to address.
Well, let's take our final break, gentlemen, and this is the Westside 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum. We've got both candidates running for that seat that was previously held by Republican Eric Severson, but he is not running for re-election. So we've got the Republican candidate Adam Jarko on the phone with us from his office. He's from Balsam Lake, and we've got in studio Travis Schachner. He's the Democrat from Somerset. Phone lines are full right now, but you can still give us a try 800-228-5615. We'll be able to work through some more calls right on the other side of this break. This is the West Side. If you've missed part of the program and want to listen again, check out our archives. Go to WPR.org, click on the shows link, and then you'll see the West Side with Rich Kramer there. You can navigate through years of programming. This is the West Side. We'll be right back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum right here on Wisconsin Public Radio stations 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. We've got both candidates running for the 28th State Assembly District. That'll be decided on November 4th. Travis Schachner is a Democrat from Somerset. He joins us in studio. Adam Jarko is a Republican from Balsam Lake. He joins us by the phone. 800-228-5615. We go to Glenn and Amory. Glenn, you're on the air. Thanks for holding on. What's on your mind?
Yeah, no, I just follow-up on Travis's response to Act 10. He said that the joke, well, goodness, you know, I, as a property owner and worker, I've saved quite a few dollars in the last 2 years, and I'm wondering why he considers that not a good thing.
All right, thanks so much. Travis, Glenn wants to know.
It's not Act 10. It was how it was passed. The fact that it was done, the fact that at the time the unions were willing to give what was wanted, and our governor forced it through. The fact that we had to have our attorney general rule that many of the acts were legal, the fact that we had to incorporate courts into it. That the fact that we had people, our legislators, leaving the state the whole thing with Act 10 is the fact that when it was passed, how it was passed, I find as something that shows a lot of lack of character when it comes to how we take our legislative process.
I want to go back to Adam Jarko, and you said you support the law. What about how it was passed? Did you see any issues with that? There was quite literally a firestorm that happened in Madison because of it.
I was disappointed by that. You know, the voters went to the polls in November of 2010, elected a Republican Assembly, a Republican Senate, and a Republican governor.
Mm-hmm.
They authored a bill, put it into hearing, and attempted to pass the bill, weren't able to do so when 14 Democratic senators ran away from their jobs into Illinois instead of doing what we pay them to do, which is to vote on difficult issues. Ultimately, the bill passed. And then for the last 3.5 years, we've seen nothing but litigation. It was in the courts because instead of accepting the will of the folks who are elected by the people of this state in the law that they passed, time and time again, they resorted to litigation and found sympathetic judges in Dane County to throw out this law. When it got to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it was approved and held to be constitutional. And when it got to the Seventh Circuit Federal Court of Appeals, it was held to be constitutional. So do I wish that there would have been less acrimony? Of course. We're Midwesterners. We don't like that. I don't like that. But at the end of the day, tough choices had to be made. Governor Doyle left us with a pretty difficult situation. And instead of laying off workers and firing workers, these folks decided to do something that would fill the budget gap and at the same time would not result in layoffs. And you have not seen any layoffs or firings, and it was because of Act 10. Without it, you would have seen folks who were laid off. And the idea that, as Mr. Schachner says, the unions were agreeable to the concessions is complete baloney, because you've seen in the places where they didn't implement the law, they did not agree to those concessions.
With that, we've got a call on the line from Colfax. This is Willem. Willem, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just calling about, you know, the booming sand mining industry in this region. And in the past legislative session, Republican Senator Tom Tiffany, has tried twice to eliminate local control, which is also one of the goals of a group called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And recently, our governor, in had made changes to the Wisconsin Environmental Policy Act, which makes it harder for citizens to petition the government for environmental analysis. And I think what I'm concerned about is I think that this strip mining industry is not attractive to other industries, so I think it's not an economic boom. In fact, I think it does economic harm because of, no one wants to move to a strip mining community. You don't take your young family and decide, well, let's move to a place where there's strip mining, making permanent and irreversible changes to our landscape. And
all right, well, Willem, we got it. We're running low on time, so I'm going to get some answers to your or some thoughts to your thoughts. First, let's go to Adam Jarko. Frac sand mining, you said you represent towns. You must no doubt have dealt with the frac sand mining in one way or another. So what are your thoughts on the industry and who's running roughshod over who, or is that even happening?
Yeah, I do have a lot of experience with this industry, and I'm proud to say that most of the municipalities that I've dealt with have struck a reasonable balance. And, of course, as the attorney for those folks, I don't get involved in the policy discussions. They do that, and then I help them prepare or draft whatever it is that the policymakers, the elected officials of that town, decide to do. And most of them have come to the understanding that the sand business is not particularly different from any other, relatively large industry. There are some good things, and there are some bad things. And a lot of them have found a way to strike a balance where they take advantage of the good things, which are some incredibly good direct jobs and indirect jobs. I was just at a factory in Amory the other day where they make equipment that they send directly to these mines, and they're supporting very, very good jobs in this factory in Amory where they weld some of this equipment. On the other hand, if you're a neighbor and you're dealing with truck traffic or sand, or you're fearful of your water supply, those are legitimate concerns, and most of the local municipalities have found a way to mitigate those concerns through their ordinances and their developers' agreements with the company, or to eliminate those concerns through the same mechanism. So I think it's an industry that is unlike any other industry in that is like most other industries in that we have some good and we have some bad, and it's a question of striking a reasonable balance.
What about Tom Tiffany's bills that would have limited local control over things like hours of operation, et cetera? I mean, is that striking the balance?
Well, what you saw after that bill was introduced was a compromise bill came out, mm-hmm. And the legislators who put forward the compromise bill worked closely with the Towns Association in developing that bill. And the Towns Association originally had supported the bill, and then after hearing from some of its members, declined to support the bill. So there are certainly people of goodwill who are working on this issue to make sure that people are protected and that that the environment is protected, but at the same time we're growing jobs. And, I've got a nice relationship with the Towns Association, having worked with those folks over the years, and I would look forward to working with them to come up with a common sense solution to this issue.
Rick Stottleman is a Wisconsin icon. But Travis Schachner, your thoughts on frac sand mining and also on these bills that sought to limit local control over what the locals could regulate?
Well, I think going after the local control first, towns need to be able to dictate their own direction. If they want a frac sand mine, they should be able to decide that. If they don't want a frac sand mine, they should be able to decide that. And it actually goes beyond just that. There have been many attempts to wrestle power away from local communities over the last 4 years. And that needs to stop. On top of that, though, we need to be able to, especially in St. Croix County, there's a frac sand mine that's opening up about a half a mile away from a school. And with the limits on...
You're talking about Glenwood City?
Yep.
They're working on it. It's been kind of gummed up a little bit. But
the catch is that even if it goes through all the way, the school should be able to say to the DNR, we want to monitor for this stuff. And right now they're hitting roadblocks with that. That's what needs to be addressed. If the public wants the area to be monitored, that should be allowed, and But I look at it also as frac sand mining is a very tight opportunity. There's a very finite amount of that sand. And we should be taking advantage of that resource as much as possible. So what I propose, what I've been pushing is for a tonnage tax to help address the infrastructure demands that the frac sand industry actually puts on the infrastructure for rural communities.
You know, it's interesting. I asked every politician that we had on our last, back in 2012, series of candidate forums about excise tax on frac sand. None of them would give an answer on it. It seemed like it was some kind of a third rail. But anyway, we're very close to the top of the hour. If I could get 15 seconds out of each of you on why the folks in the 28th should vote for you, I'd appreciate it. So, Adam Jericho, first, we go to you.
Yeah, the great thing about America is our elections, and you have a choice. And I think you've seen today that you've got a choice here to make. And I think if you want a pro-jobs tax cutter in this assembly district, I'm your guy.
All right, to Travis Schachner.
I think if you want pro jobs, yeah, Adam is your guy. However, our representation needs to remember that they're representing families and people, and that's what I intend to represent.
All right, gentlemen, that's our time. Thank you both so much for your conversation. This has been the Westside 28th State Assembly District Candidate Forum. Adam Jericho is the Republican running for the office. He's from Balsam Lake. Travis Schachner is the Democrat running for the office. He's from Somerset. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. If you missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out our archives at WPR.org. Click on shows and then on the West Side. This Thursday, we have a special edition candidate forum coming to you at 10 in the morning. It's the 87th State Assembly District Candidate Forum this Thursday, 10 a.m. Al Ross is off this week, so we are taking that time to squeeze in one more in our series of candidate forums. That district, 87th, includes, the candidates are Republican James Jimmy Boyd Edming and Democrat Richard Poulter. That'll be Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Big thanks to Team Westside for helping out, Mort Cypress, Henry Lipple, Dean Cullenbeck, Tiffany Coggins, the list goes on. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next on Thursday morning.